Blog Talk Radio.
The 21st of February, 2016, we're zeroing in on the equinox here in this part of the world. Spring is trying to burst through, and winter is just giving us a last shake as it disappears for another year. We have to have some fun with the topic, all the serious topics, by coming together as conveniently as we can through the airwaves to sit down and scratch our heads and talk. Not the kind of smiles and handshakes that we usually do when we get together. But this is about sitting back in your comfortable chair, wrapping your hand around a glass of Merlot or a single malt or an espresso, or as I am here this morning. And thinking a little bit. That's the most unpleasant opportunity that gets all those crinkly noses going when you're inside a lodge. We don't want too much thought, because then we become, you know, what do we use, Poindexters or eggheads. Yeah, we're just reclaiming some turf here on Masonic Effects, turf that's been always not too far under the surface, but whose time has come. Truly, whose time has come. Commentary today is reveals a little bit more about Masonic Effects. This is the opinion of the author, and in no way should it be considered the orthodox. And if it seems to sound orthodox, then I'll pull it off. If this isn't out of the box, then it's just not worth coming to you with. It's just one of those little prods here. Mm-hmm. And by the way, thank you very much for the overwhelming response out there. Somebody's talking to somebody and sitting down and joining us. So excellent. Thanks very much for all of that. Here's what I want you to think about. I want to take a look at masonry in the eye. Apart from my respect for ritual and respect for the various offices of masonry. I also have this sense, like many of you, about the potential of the order. And that raises a question. Are we on the path toward that potential? What can we do to contribute to that global and collective vision of what some would say is an unrealistic expectation, and others would say an absolute necessity. So today we're going to talk about looking masonry in the eye. We're not schoolboys. We don't have to quake in our boots. When we take a look at our fraternity, our collective responsibility, our stewardship of something that's been going on for, what, arguably 300-400 years, and the ideas behind it, or the ideas in front of it. No doubt listeners find Freemasonry compelling. So let's collectively more closely examine this enigma. Enigma? Yeah. Packaged as a fraternal order, dialogue is very shy. It feels as if all answers but the right answer are inadequate. The right answer? Well, that's fluid as rain. If we concern ourselves that examining the very core, the course of Freemasonry through time, is unwelcome, then we may have some evidence about why, for so many lodges, the optics themselves are daunting. No sense of disloyalty in this. To my mind, this might explain how the study of Oxford became a preoccupation, became a fraternity. Join us as Masonic Effects tries to make sense of the unimaginable. Freemasonry is not the study of itself. Now just think about that one. Freemasonry is not the study of itself. Heretical, I can see the soldiers marching with their pikes coming for me now. Oh dear. It isn't, but it isn't. Because it's because we'll get into that. It's not the study of itself until we understand the birth of Freemasonry. What is the critical piece that gives us order? We can't understand what it is until we can't understand until we search out what we do not know. Is it the study of consciousness, awareness, insight itself? One theory suggests function. That has to do with happiness. We're going to rely here on not me, but that 12th century Dominican Thomas Aquinas to help us understand more about that, just like we did before on Masonic Effects when we talked about charity and what that is. The range, it's not one thing. Like, it is ambitious to study purpose within two enormous orbits, one being art, the other science. We search for truth that doesn't depend on the eloquence of the speaker, but on the absolute. The mathematics of music is what immediately comes to mind because of what I've been reading lately. Truth is a constant. In happiness, the socialization is happiness, the socialization. Not so, I would say, because it is overridden by weaker forces. Personality, threshold, intelligence vary. So this tells us purpose equals socialization equals happiness is an eloquent, not absolute truth. Why have we not answered the question of purpose? Until now, we have operated on theory, unsupported. And an offshoot of that has been written into ritual. However, curiosity cannot be controlled. We presume there are patterns, and we are elements or products of forces that produce those patterns. But try as we might for order, we also are mathematicians, our scientists, our thinkers have helped us to understand chaos is also a constant. Do the math, Freemasons. Why is Freemason the size we are? Why is it this way? Instead of looking at, oh my goodness, it's withering or it's fading. I don't know that. And I think that's incredibly judgmental. The evidence, but it's an explanation. It's a good explanation for the evidence in front of us. Our numbers are dwindling. And some wring their hands at these the way that in jurisdictions, experiments are being done to try and bolster those numbers. You know, I've even heard the idea that we should put billboards on the side of the highways. For some, this is a bit scandalous. For others, it's just going about good business. But I'm looking at it, and I want you to come over here and take a look. Change your perspective. Instead of being stared down by Freemasonry, Freemasonry is big. Instead of staring it head on, just for a second, come over here with me and look at what we see. Why is it this size? Not what's happened to it, but why? Why are the elements around us that produced Freemasonry changing the critical mass of our membership? And as we move on through time space, is this becoming a constant? Or are we moving along in great curves and unaffected by the likes of you and me, unaffected by those so-called recruiters, all the people that really don't take account of the strict or orthodox sense of how Masonry should be handled, but the more comfortable old slippers approach. I'm reminded of the attitudes of some of my very dear mentors. They're comfortable. What insults them is conflict. But you have to wonder why. I think it's not conflict. It's what the conflict says about the speaker. The content is lost, of course. When you're just bitching and complaining all the time, you lose credibility. It's like the persistent devil's advocate loses credibility rather fast in the discussion because it doesn't really contribute in a forthright way. Why? So ask yourself, why are we? What that means? We stretch ourselves to look at what influences are out there. opposing forces, understanding which are the greater and lesser forces, if at all. So bear with me. Indulge me a little bit. We know, based on what we've experienced, that growth is not linear. We don't know if it is another type of constant. Could it be growth in pulses? And those pulses occur out of memory. in other words, longer than the lifespan and experience of one man. But if we go back and look at Freemasonry and face on, hundreds of years. Now, lift your head up. We're not pulling lint out of our navels. How can we accept that random accidents of personalities in the lodge have no explanation whatsoever? You know, those clashes of egos where everybody in that side of the world is right and the rest of us are wrong. Or that the pushy people are doing it right and to be rewarded for that. Since when? Pushiness, arrogance, power has nothing at all to do with genius, nothing at all to do with answers. Oh, you may cite some fine examples of where that hasn't been the case, where those indomitable personalities were part and parcel of the success, but we could equally sit and talk about personalities that were secluded and shy. The Tesla compared to the Edison. People of integrity compared to carpetbaggers ready to rip off ideas and have the credit. And what's going on now is the big question about flight. Because we know this German fellow was flying before the Wright brothers. Wright brothers in 1903, this German guy that none of us have ever heard about, 1901. But, and you could fill in the blank about why and how that's occurred, but you see, history does offer us some opportunity to get it right, to cleanse it, if we take a look at the unvarnished side of it. On the other hand, is Freemasonry based on symmetry and order? Now, Freemasonry is us. Yeah? It is also an idea, an ideal. So if we're looking at symmetry in the physics of Freemasonry, then chaos theory is part of that. Part of the order, part of the evolution, is this entropy, this decline. We know that, we know that the neutrinos in the core of the sun take 8 years to get to the surface. And then, what, about 7 minutes to get from the surface of the sun to you and I. Now, it means that the sun is expelling a mass. The neutrino has a mass. And we know that because we our theorists began to make explanations of the earliest evidence, and there wasn't much of it. Now we're able to have very sophisticated tools. Our artificers have created the tools necessary to make those measurements. So now we have this open marriage between the theorists and the experimental, the ideas and the builders. And it's coming and it's happening around us. It's always been around us, but now it's celebrated. It's like the kid that was punched and laughed at and ridiculed because he was the geek. Well, now the geeks are running things. Thank you. So this nut here, here's a little bumper sticker that we often hear: from chaos, order. From order, order. So is Freemasonry in decline? Freemasonry is stable, otherwise it would not have lasted so long. I put this on our list of Masonic, if that's fair. It's not fair. It's a list of conceits of the mind that we're in decline. Oh my goodness, we have to do something harder and stronger and we have to cling together. We're the ship is sinking. Let's all head for the life rafts. Have you not noticed something? Get over yourself. We're a bit dim if we have that approach. That's like saying, well, you know, there must be a Navy man out there listening to me. You're in a little bit of rough water. And what happens when the bow of the boat is in the trough? Oh, my goodness, we're going to the bottom? No. We're in a trough. It's going to splash a bit, but then we're going to be launched up the backside of the wave, aren't we? So we're floating along in this ocean. Sometimes it's choppy, sometimes not. But what do the figures telling us? Moving from failure to failure with unrestricted enthusiasm. That's a Masonic secret. I guess nobody told you. Oh my. This is you stepping into the laboratory or the laboratory of Freemasonry. It's not that, oh, we quake because things fail, we shudder. Yeah, get those people in the lifeboats first. The rest of us that have a pair, scratch our heads or our arses. Sit back in the knowledge that it's going to be a bit of a mess, but we always float back. And what the hell went happen? What happened there? And it's like you have these big events, and you get rid of the detritus. It just washes off the deck. That's fine. But we are always have this group of people quite capable of thoughtfully looking at one another and saying, "What the hell was that?" And some other upstart saying, hey, do you think it was this? Or do you think it was that? So your loose-arsed, opinionated fellows, you get together. And the ones that start to use a little bit of evidence, use a little bit of science and reason and logic, start to make sense. And the others, they're just enthusiastic as hell, you know, because out of that enthusiasm will come something. And we approach our failures that way. But do we celebrate that? No, let's not even go there. Well, I'm just telling you, come on back over here and look at some Freemasonry square in the face. And there it is. Do you notice? How in the hell do you think we've lasted? It's not like we've lasted. We've defined it. We've understood something that was there before 1717, and will be there a long time after you and I. We're talking about thought. In the commentary, I talked about how that we study Oxford. Now, Oxford was around when the Mayans were around, right? Oh my, you know, okay, so this is an old notion. Let's sit down and put our thinkers together, and let's have our brightest training the next generation. Well, that seems to make a heck of a lot of sense. It doesn't mean that Oxford was the first place, because we also know that in ancient Middle East, there were sultans that created, and I'll bring that material for a subsequent commentary, and recognized and brought the greatest minds, the literary minds, mathematicians, astronomers, astrologers together. And then you sit back and say, well, you put all these bright people together, something's bound to happen. Right. Think tanks. The Howard Hughes Institute. Think tanks where you put bright people together. Well, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to apologize here. Freemasonry has a lot of very bright people. Not all of them have the temperament and patience for the work. Freemasonry makes it unnecessarily hard. But Freemasonry is not the study of Freemasonry. It's not the study of when a lodge was built or when or how a symbol was developed. That's just too self-absorbed, don't you think? I haven't heard yet much. I know this is going on out there. I know these ideas are percolating, but it's just so hard to live as a Mason, knowing all of this enriched work is going on, and there's a timidity, a shyness, a self-consciousness about putting it out there. Once again, it's Darwin sitting on his findings because he was worried, he was afraid of the being ostracized by his peers because his ideas were out of the box. And when he released them, yeah, he was ostracized. He was worried about himself, the effect on his wife, the effect on his family. And was he right? Yes, he was right. He was ostracized. And now we gleefully move on, misquoting him, claiming things about his work that just, the poor man deserves better than that. But we're the same lot that can turn an intellectual exercise, a need, a craving to satisfy our thinking into the study of a structure. Well, if we studied the principles that put Oxford on its track, and we studied the history, what we know about the decision to put the university in Oxford. And I only say this because it's so darn old and it's relatively identifiable. And that's what we did. And we studied who was the first chair of mathematics. And then we studied who was the first chair of rhetoric. And we never studied what they were doing. We never studied why they were doing it and what they found and how it made a difference. If we never looked at what the product of Oxford was, the product, like Freemasonry, is preparation. It's the preparation of the mind, the character of a man, not the control of him. Because we have this sense that when a man becomes a student, when he becomes a student of the arts and sciences, when he commits himself to a life of principle, then he is going to have impact, whatever he does, wherever he goes. But it's all right to admit that at some point. It's all right. There's nothing at all wrong saying that out loud. But stop and be a little gentle. You don't have to point fingers at those blank stares in the room that just don't get it. It's all right. Not everybody gets it. Not everybody gets cubism. Not everybody gets quantum physics. Not everybody gets geometry. But it doesn't mean it doesn't have a place. Not everybody gets philosophy. Now you think about the things that everybody probably should be looking at. I'm going to put on a little music, and I'm going to bring up, I need your feedback here on the article. This is what I'm calling the paper. I'm putting it all together. Freemasons, should we be proud of the power of the human mind? Mathematics is something that human beings can understand. Freemasonry works, but it opens up paradoxes that we need to understand, theoretical or applied, one needing the other. Here, just enjoy this beautiful voice.
never ending or beginning on an ever spinning wheel, like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon, like a cat in the sky running rings around the moon, like a cuckoo in the season at the limits of its space. And the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Like the tunnel that you follow to a tunnel of its own, down a hole to a cavern where the sun has never shone, like a door that keeps revolving in a half-forgotten dream, or the ripples from a pebble someone tosses in a stream, like a cuckoo stands or sweeping past the minutes of its space. And the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Keep the jingle in your pocket, words that jangle in your head. Why did summer go so quickly? Was it something that you said? Lovers walk along the shore and leave their footprints in the sand. It's the sound of distant drumming, just the fingers of your head. It's just hanging in a hallway, and the fragment of a song has remembered names and faces, but to whom do they belong? When he knew that it was over, you were suddenly aware that the autumn leaves were turning to the color of his hair.
Thomas Aquinas in this, so just to refresh your memory about this guy. This is a fellow that really, his wheelhouse was moral philosophy. This is a 13th century man. And here he brought together what up until that point had been, you know, disparate traditions. Aristotelian Eudaimonism, Christian theology. He followed Aristotle, thinking that an act is good or bad depending on whether it contributes to or deters us from our proper human end, the telos, final goal at which all human actions aim. The telos is happiness, where happiness is understood in terms of completion, perfection, and well-being. Ah, got your attention now, didn't I? Got my attention. Achieving happiness, however, requires a range of intellectual and moral virtues that enable us to understand the nature of happiness and motivate us to seek it in a reliable and consistent way. Opening your eyes a little wider now as you stare Freemasonry in the face, aren't you? It's pretty daunting. Remember the exception, what Freemasonry is giving to you, what you're bound and obliged to accept is this knowledge. But Aquinas outlined it really beautifully for us. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here. He believed that we can never achieve complete or final happiness in this life. So it was a quest. It was that holy grail, the brass ring. We're always striving. A man's reach should always exceed his grasp, or what's heaven for? Isn't that the way it's put? For him, final happiness consists in beatitude, or supernatural union with God, with the great creator, the universe. And such an end for in his thinking lay far beyond what we, through our natural human capacities, can attain. Our natural capacities are that good meal, enjoying a glass with you. That's great. That's personality. That's friendship. For this reason, we not only need the virtues, we also need the Creator to transform our nature, to perfect or deify it, so that we might be suited to participate in that divine. But Aquinas, moreover, believed that we inherited a propensity to screw up. But it's not like we're a mess. Remember, we're the enthusiasts. We're the one that get up, shake our head, and say, what the hell is that? And we learn from it. I know there's people out there that want to make it seem like we're just inadequate creatures. Yeah, fine. We're curious creatures. So we're looking at a ethical view coming to us from a 13th century. So we'll stop there. Let me help you just add to what this guy was about. I'll give you a few ideas that will help you fill in the blanks. He said, because philosophy arises from awe, a philosopher is bound in his way to be a lover of myths and poetic fables. Poets and philosophers are alike in being big with wonder. Some of you are like that. Some of you are very shy about it, but every judgment of conscience, be it right or wrong, be it about things evil in themselves or morally indifferent, is obligatory in such wise that he who acts against his conscience always is wrong. Now, a little bit of a challenge here. If the highest aim of a captain were to preserve his ship, he would keep it in port forever. Safe, huh? What's the highest aim of Freemasonry? To keep it in the box, not let it out. Is that working? How's that working for us? But this is the same fellow who said, no, there is nothing on this earth more to be prized than true friendship. We can't have full knowledge all at once, he says. We must start by believing. And then afterwards, we may be led on to master the evidence for ourselves. We must start by believing. Believe there's an answer. Believe that there's a different way. How this relaxation of the mind from work consists in playful words or deeds now. Therefore, it becomes a wise and virtuous man to have recourse to such things as times. Now this relaxation of the mind from work consists of playful words or deeds. Play a game of chess with your mates? Do you play a game of cards? Do you watch now the contemporary version would be sitting down and watching sports, extolling your team or the team to do better, or the Olympics. Playful words to describe the singers, the greatest singers, and trying to understand what makes some voices better, why we value some more, or we put our head back in the box, don't we? How is it that they live in such harmony, the billions of stars, when most men can barely go a minute without declaring war in their minds about someone they know? How is it? If then you are looking for the way by which you should go, the Creator, follow the Creator. It is possible to demonstrate the Creator's existence, although not a priori, but posteriori, for some of his work more surely known of us, to us than others. And I'll leave it with this. You get the sense of the man. The highest manifestation of life consists in this, that a being governs its own actions. A thing which is always subject to the direction of another is somewhat of a dead thing. Always subject to the direction of another. The highest manifestation in life is that you govern your own actions. You think for yourself. You stop being afraid that you're doing something wrong. This is no license to be a fool. This is license to accept the responsibility for yourself. Get with the program. We live in a very advanced culture, and it to be part of that requires things of us. We know that, I think, better than a lot of people, perhaps, because we're Masons. We understand what compliance is, why the some compliance is necessary to help define us. The grips, the words, the mannerisms, the dignity that we bring to the order. If your lodge is to have that, it's because of you, not because of it or somebody else. There are always Philistines, always, trust me on that. Coarse-minded, it's just inescapable. It's like sitting down at a meal with somebody that doesn't have manners. Now, if I'm sitting at a farm table and we're all scoffing it down because we've got to get back, that's one thing. If we're sitting at a table that's been prepared by staff that are making every effort to make us feel comfortable, coarseness doesn't have a place. That's where we learn our manners. Manners are simply a way for us to reduce tensions. They're answers when the unexpected comes up. How to act. Here's what I'm wrestling with. I think Thomas Aquinas would have made an interesting Mason. Now, you're hearing this. This needs some heavy editing, I think. In some ways, he was the archetypal happy influence, even if too full of awe and wonder. Imagine, he read poetry, and he was devout. Well, oy fey. Too interesting by far, I would say. I mention him because learning about his work helped reduce my confusion about our sense of respect as Freemasons, and why his work helped, and why it seems so lumpy when we talk about reforming and rediscovery. We show our collective self to be timid. Even in lodge, respect is traded. There for some, not there for others. Like leadership, solid Masons expect leaders to earn respect and Masons to be respectful. Given the parade of shame we witness in the media, a uniform is not a sign of honesty. I can't tell you the number of handshakes extended to men and women who have served in the military while thanking them for preserving the culture of Canada and a particular way of life for everybody. Politicians, police, lawyers, and clergy all lost the moral high ground. But I have very good friends in that group that I respect and trust greatly. Still, piety of any sort has become suspect, hasn't it? Authority unchecked, as it always does, as being overbearing. Blind respect is no longer demanded and no longer given. The darkness we confront as Freemasons is ignorance. So ignorance to all of this. So we're thinking that when we were younger, we didn't know about it and we were happier. It wasn't bliss. When we didn't know about these things, people were being hurt. Children were being hurt. We were all being hurt. Being well-informed means we're vigilant. Ignorance is a barrier to enlightenment. But it seems respect is a path to happiness. I scratched my head when I saw that, when I read that. A feeling, respect, a feeling of deep admiration for someone or something elicited by their abilities, qualities, and achievements. A particular aspect, point, or detail. Or as a verb, it's something that we admire deeply as a result of their abilities, qualities, or achievements. How do we move forward, or how we move forward, or whether we move forward at all, with most purpose, must continue to stumble until we talk about our sensitivities and conceits. Freemasonry in all its forms is consistent and dynamic at the same time. This movement is not controllable. It's not. With that in mind, we examine one of our more important sensibilities. Respect is like a genie in a bottle. It won't be stuffed back. It's like freedom and beauty. Is there one form of respect or one that outperforms all others? When people slip into uniform, they morph into organization and coordinated purpose. In the mind, a group mentality occurs during indoctrination. When tasked with defending a culture, they are the stuff of protection and power. God bless them. For this mindset, unchallenged respect for rank is expected. This type of connection is made obvious at the onset. Masonry, on the other hand, deals in a deeper form of respect that answers a question that too often has left us to doubt our capability. For this respect, we owe much to the Renaissance. Philosophy teaches us respect is earned, never assumed. Despots exercise authority. Attitudes and behavior reveal our collective mentality. History has taught us about the unchecked authority. And today, people are still forced into submission. But we have realized for hundreds of years, a remarkable number of conversations passed through Freemasonry with no resolution. So the question here that I put to you is, can we accept that our perspective on Freemasonry is changing? We don't know that Freemasonry itself is changing because we don't understand all of the properties of that phenomena. But we know can we work more speculatively around the ideas of Freemasonry and still be seen as doing it respectfully? And do we have the depth to do that even when we're challenging the properties of respect itself? Somebody has to look at that aspect of Freemasonry in the face, in the fullness of it, without being shackled, without being criticized. But the only way I think we should or could do this is having confidence in the people doing that work, that while it may stretch our sensibilities, and if we're going to get anywhere, we probably need that stretch, that we have a sense that the people doing it are dedicated and are not deliberately trying to cause insult, but that it's necessary. It's a one of the caveats. It's one of our failings, in a way, to understand, to keep focused on the need to produce good science, good art. Now, I'll talk to you about that a little more. What do you think? Does that part fit into the paper? I'll leave a little something here to give you a beautiful voice to preoccupy for a second. This is Paula Cole. She's singing a song called I Don't Want to Wait.
Open up your morning light. Say a little prayer for I. You know that if we are to stay alive, see the peace in every eye.
I don't wanna wait for our lives to be over.
when did this wild and speculative type of a process, Freemasonry, congeal? Think of it. When was the Big Bang? Was it the collision of these objects in the mind that sort of came by happenstance together? Or was it a divine intervention? Aha, good question. Check this out for me. This idea, we're talking here about the idea of genius. Respect. So I'll conclude with this. One of the legacies, a legacy from the Renaissance, was a belief in genius. It was something rarer than skill or talent, and it would transform the arts. It has taken us from respect for the trained talent, manipulating the experience that is out there for all to know, to awe before the uniquely inspired self. From admiration to awe, from the imitation of nature to the recreation of nature. From the artist filling a patron's orders to the patron waiting for an artist's creation. Talent is that which is in a man's power. Genius is that in whose power a man is. In ancient Roman religion, the genius was the ruling spirit that perpetuated a household or a family. It came to mean the guardian spirit of a guild, a place, or an individual, which a person might worship on his birthday. After Augustus, the genius of an emperor would be worshipped. The spirit of a woman or a goddess was known and worshipped as Juno. But medieval Europe didn't put a high value on originality. If it had been proved that Leonardo da Vinci had copied the items in his notebook from other books, it would only have increased respect for his learning and would not have stirred any charges of plagiarism. Individualism, a novel expression to which a novel idea has given birth, did not enter our English vocabulary till 1835, when Tocqueville used it to describe what he found in America. But genius, suggesting originality, had deeper roots, supremely embodied in Michelangelo, the unique, unpredictable creator has cast a spell over the arts in modern times. Chagall, Dante, and Giotto were admired for the awesome immortality of their works. Yet the word divine was rarely applied to living artists or poets before the 16th century. Alberti, in his work and painting in 1436, already saw in the artist a divine power. Leonardo, too, declared the painter's work nobler than that of nature, and his painter was a second god. The Portuguese painter Francisco de Holanda observed in Rome in 1538 that in Italy one does not care for the renown of great princes. It is a painter only that they call the divine. During the Middle Ages, the artist had been a man of trained skills and disciplined life. Quite a bit of movement. I'll just leave you with that. A little bit of a Canadian songstress. Thanks for joining me today on Masonic Effects. It's been a pleasure. I'll look forward to your feedback. MasonicEffects@gmail.com. I look forward to you joining me next week for more. In the meantime, commit those acts of Masonic kindness. You're a great bunch of fellows.
you.